In this season, after Easter, these weeks following the Easter resurrection, the appearances of the resurrected Christ to his followers are brought into focus in the stories that we hear from Scripture, which, quite frankly, can be somewhat troublesome because they are odd stories. Because the central point of those stories is that the proclamation celebrated on Easter that this Jesus who was crucified, dead, and buried was somehow raised from the dead is, in the end of all things, fundamentally unprovable. Unprovable. And these stories serve as ancient proofs. It's certainly unprovable 20 centuries later by any method that we try to rely upon for empirical evidence to establish truth. But it is still the point of all of these post-resurrection stories to relate the stories of how even the very closest friends and most devoted disciples of Jesus all found the resurrection unbelievable until these shocking and unexpected encounters happened. Encounters that proved to be so amazing and so empowering that they somehow transformed this band of frightened followers who cowered behind locked doors into leaders of a movement that swept and would forever change the world as we know it. As I mentioned last week, of the several post-resurrection appearances of the risen Christ, it's interesting to notice that many of these transformative encounters include shared meals. Last week, if you were here, you may recall, we heard the story of the two disciples on the road to the village of Emmaus, how the presence of the risen Christ, it's set on the very same day of the resurrection, that somehow unrecognizable to those two disciples, Christ comes alongside, walks with them on the road, engages them in conversation, hears from them telling the events of the week. Then they invite this still unrecognized presence of Christ to join them for a meal. And as he took bread, blessed, and broke it, he was made known to them. Their eyes were opened. He was recognized in the breaking of bread. So if that Last Supper happened on the Thursday of Holy Week, the meal at Emmaus on that night of the resurrection is the First Supper of the resurrection, the First Supper of the risen, resurrected life. Next Sunday, we'll hear what I like to call the first breakfast. But today, the story that we hear is what I'm choosing to call, at least for these weeks, call the Next Supper. Because at the opening of the verses that we hear today, we realize we're entering a scene that is already in progress. These verses immediately follow the return of those two disciples from Emmaus. They have hurried back to Jerusalem to tell the other disciples what has just happened to them, what they have just experienced. So we enter the story today while those gathered disciples are discussing what had just happened. And Jesus appears and stands among them. Now, in many ways, this scene echoes the appearance of Jesus in the Gospel of John, the appearance of Jesus to the disciples and then to Thomas. In fact, Luke and John may be telling two different versions of the original story of how Christ appeared and stood among the disciples. The presence of Christ stands and speaks in both places, "Peace be with you." There is the prominent mention of fear and doubt, not highlighted in Thomas here as it is in John, but it's recognized in the hearts of all of the disciples who are gathered. And there is this need for physical proof, this showing of the crucifixion wounds in hands and feet. In John, it includes the side, that somehow by that, they would know this is Jesus. But here, the additional comment on the lips of Jesus, that this resurrection body was solid flesh and bone, that it was no ghostly apparition or some other kind of spirit that may be deceiving them. It is a story that is told to verify that the resurrection was somehow physical and not just an imagined or a metaphorical event. In this story, there is this additional curious detail where Christ asks to be given something to eat. So essentially, the resurrected Christ shows up and says, "Feed me. Feed me, disciples." I find that a very curious request. Now, it is a detail, to be sure, upon initial reading, that is just one more further demonstration of a physical, material nature of this resurrected body. But I don't think that's all that it means. But I don't think that's all that it means. That's what it says. This request for broiled fish doesn't seem to stem from a physical need to eat, but it's an additional proof that he was in a real body. But for me, those ancient concerns over the exact bodily nature of the resurrection are really not my concerns. It does not trouble me one way or the other. So I find this request for a bite to eat as, quote, one more piece of evidence really rather unsatisfying. And this notion that someone who had just overcome death and the grave, who can pop in and out of rooms at whim, is suddenly, shall we say, peckish, seems a little too comical to be the spiritual point. The risen Christ asking, "Feed me," must mean more for it to mean something to me. Last week, I read an interesting essay by an Eastern Orthodox Christian theologian, Father Alexander Schmemann, and it was an essay on sacrifice and worship. Yes, I am a geek. I will readily admit it. But it was a fascinating and really beautifully written essay that examined this notion of sacrifice in Christian tradition and worship, how it differs between Western Christian theology and Eastern theology. And one of the things that really jumped out at me was Father Schmemann, contrary to a lot of scholars of religion who say that the primal, the ancient origin of religious sacrifice in any religion, because it is in many, many religions, that the origin of sacrifice is fear. That somehow giving a sacrifice, whatever it might be, is to somehow avoid a judgment or to appease an angered or offended deity. Schmemann suggests that a sacrifice is not given out of fear originally, but it's given out of a desire, a need, in fact, to share in communion with the divine. He goes on to say, in the case of a sacrifice, animal, grain, whatever it might have been, it's a portion of what someone would have eaten, and it was burned and given as a kind of food to the deity. And by doing so, it was a way of sharing the substance of a meal with the divine to become, he used the words, consubstantial, to commune, to give and share the movement and impulse of life. The essay is called "The Energy of Life." Usually don't think of that in terms of sacrifice. But to give from the substance, not the surplus, but the substance of what one has, not out of fear, but out of this desire, dare we call it this hunger, for a relationship with the divine. I realize this could have turned into a stewardship sermon, but that's a different sermon. When Jesus showed up and the disciples were in surprise and doubt and fear, as it says in the story, was this request to be given food less about having a body and really about having a relationship? The story reminds me a lot of one of the other rare instances where Jesus asks to be given something for an apparently physical need. You may recall the story of Jesus and the Samaritan woman at the well. The story unfolds with Jesus' first request, "Give me a drink of water," of this unknown woman. This request to give me a drink initiated the longest theological conversation Jesus has with anyone in the Gospels. It opens the door to a relationship that shocks his followers, that transforms her into the first evangelist of Jesus Christ. "Give me a drink, feed me. I want to be in relationship with you." You know, to share food with someone is an intimate relational act, isn't it? Have you ever been on a first date with someone and either you or they want something off of the other person's plate? Now, how you negotiate asking that, or if you dare to ask, or if you refuse to share off of your plate, to pick food off of another person's plate, or to remove food from your plate and give it to another, actually shows a lot about someone's emotional and relational disposition, doesn't it? How we share food is emblematic of emotional connection. Imagine a parent feeding a child. Someone who feeds someone else who is weak or ill or infirm. Imagine lovers who feed one another, either by hand or with a spoon or a fork, to give food to another person is very intimate. To ask to be fed is to ask for intimacy. The way we serve communion in MCC is very powerful, and it is very intimate. And it is sometimes uncomfortably intimate. In our worship training classes, I have taken to call the manner in which we serve communion public intimacy, because it is done in public and it is very intimate. And I realize that that is a kind of PDA, a public display of affection, that in some ways we are all about PDA in MCCs around the world. And it is certainly not like communion was served in many of our traditions. In my Presbyterian church tradition, we sat in the pews and passed the little plates of squares of bread and the separate little cups. There was no touching, no touching of other people. But in MCCs, we invite people to actually come forward. This is similar to how communion is served in many liturgical churches, Catholic, Episcopal, etc. But people come forward, and most often the communion server will take a wafer, will dip it, and with their own fingers place it in the mouth or tongue of the person in front of them. Now, not everyone does that. We certainly invite people, if you don't want that to do, you extend, you cup your hands, and we give you the bread. But there is something as a server and as a receiver about that moment that is very vulnerable, that is very, very intimate. And it's also a moment that is very powerful, and all things powerful can be used for good and for ill. So hopefully we are very cautious and careful about how it is we indulge that intimacy. It's an intimacy with one another. It's an intimacy of the Spirit of God reaching toward us. But as I've been thinking about communion in terms of this particular story, every time that I serve communion, which is virtually every Sunday for probably the last 20 years, I have learned to, as best as I possibly can, see the person that is in front of me as a beloved sister or brother, as a fellow human being that desires that connection with God through the bread and the cup. But in terms of this story, what if I started to see that person in front of me as Christ? What if it was actually Christ in front of me asking to receive? If I heard the voice of Christ asking, feed me, not just a morsel of something that can be eaten, but hungry to be in a relationship. It is not just we who receive the communion of Christ, but in that moment, is it Christ who is receiving the communion of us? The risen Christ asks, feed me, both then and now, because God is as hungry for us as we are hungry for God. Not hungry for food, but for relationship and intimacy, for communion with us. Christ asks, have you anything? Feed me. I hunger not for the food, but I hunger for you.